recovered alcoholic, and my name is Cecil. I got asked a couple minutes ago if I was nervous about doing this, and that nervousness stopped a little while ago doing this, because it's not my first time doing it. And there's been times I've gotten up here and I've remembered that I do actually have a pulse, because my heart has sometimes goes thump, 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 like really, really fast. And I normally have my best shares like that, but today it wasn't going like that, because I had a sponsor who used to tell me that sometimes when you work with sponsees, you tell them things that seem to apply in your life. And about 15 minutes ago, I had a sponsee who called me, and he's messed up, for lack of a better word. He's got to get something done, and he's all anxious and annoying. Okay, stop. Stop what you're doing. Take a couple of moments for yourself. Pray for the strength to get through it, you know? And because that's what I've been taught here in this fellowship. Because I thought I could rule the world, myself, and everything else around me. And I failed miserably at it. And when I took that responsibility out of my hands, things seemed to get a little better. You'll hear in the room sometimes that God will do for you what you're unable to do for yourself. And I could not stop drinking. And a whole bunch of other things. But I tried so many different ways to do it, and they all failed because they all went back to a drink. And I'm going to tell you a little bit what it was like for me. I'm not going to go into huge detail because it's funny sometimes, and it's my ego. If I start making people laugh about all the crazy things I've done, I'm not really being honest. I'm just trying to impress. And my story's not that impressive, to the truth be told. But, I did like every other drunk who's come in these rooms. I drank a lot, and my life got really screwed up. So, anyway, long story short, I've been in the fellowship now for 3.5 years, give or take a couple of months. My home group is Steps to Sobriety. Our 18th anniversary, as Grant said, is on November 24th. Come celebrate with us. We'd love to have you. Yeah, a little plug. When you lose your way, you're supposed to take a drink. Catch your thoughts. I came in on April 12th, 2001. That was the day of my last drink, and I made it to the rooms of recovery for the second time about 3 weeks later. And because what I was doing wasn't working, and I needed to try something else. Because everything else I tried, as I said before, didn't work. It led to cocaine, poker machines, escorts, and whole bunch of other things. And I always felt angry, alone, and really foolish and stupid. So I'll tell you a little bit about my insanity. Like most other drunks, I never felt I really fit in. I was a dreamer. I was unable to focus. Not that my focus is 100% now, but it's way better than it once was. I complete a couple of things today. I was never able to complete anything when I was younger. I used to be one of those kids who'd sit near the window and look out into the clouds, and that's where my mind was. You know, I could watch a baseball game, and I could be the pitcher, the hitter, the guy who caught the ball, the hockey player. I'd take the shot and make the save, and my world was so much, that imaginary world was so much better than my world, and I never fit in. I never accepted any of the love that was given to me, and there was a whole bunch of it that was given to me by my mother, my grandparents, my father, and a couple of friends that I had. And I systematically, through my drinking and poor behavior patterns that I learned to learn to live through hate, I systematically got rid of everybody else in my life who cared for me, and I was able to add more people who wanted to be just like me, selfish, self-centered, egotistical, a drunk, a junkie, who didn't care about anything. And my first drunk was in grade 10. It was just like, that day was just like any other day in my life. I was doing my best to make everybody like me. I happened to be a people pleaser. And I was at a party at a friend's place, and I was doing a little DJing, I was taking calls, cracking jokes, doing a little bartending, getting ice, whatever needed to be done, you know, to make people like me. And I remember I went down to my friend's basement, Andreas, and there was 5 or 6 people there, and this one guy drank about a quarter bottle of dark rum. And everybody else in the room thought he was really, really cool. So to make the rest of those people like me, I decided to drink as much as I could out of that bottle. When I first came in, I said I drank probably the rest of it, but my recollection of events after that aren't that good. I remember throwing up on Besbro between Chester and Fielding. I know I got home, and I never thought I had a blackout, but truth be told, my first time I got drunk, I blacked out because I don't remember getting home. I don't remember the rest of it. And I'm assuming I had a good time because, well, maybe I didn't. I don't know. Nobody told me any horrible stories or things I did or anything like that, but it was all right, you know. And that throwing up thing happened a lot when I drank because my body was unable to keep it in. I'd drink X amount, and I was not one of those binge drinkers who go for 3 or 4 days. My body just wouldn't allow me, you know. 6 or 7 hours, boom, it was over. It all came out of me, you know, and sometimes I would put some more in it, and guess what, I'd throw it back out, you know. But that's what it was like, and it was just crazy. I, as I said before, I systematically got rid of everything that was good in my life, and I just added all those things that were bad. I didn't do well at school, I didn't really do well in most of my day jobs, because I couldn't focus. But what I could do was, I was able, as a people pleaser, I was able to serve, or I was able to serve food. I learned how to serve drinks, and then I learned how to serve dope, you know, and that's what I did. I systematically got myself out of a good situation and put myself in a bad situation. Every night, there was always booze around, there was always dope around, and well, that was it. And it was just, responsibility went out the way. Didn't pay bills, I didn't have to, I had a wonderful enabler who would, you know, spend all my money and just go home, and there was a bed, and there was a roof, and all sorts of good things that you would need, you know? And long story short, I don't know if I was born an alcoholic or when I became an alcoholic, but I do know that my behavioral patterns made it where getting a drink was necessary for me. And it was also quite easy. I was, because there's a 1446A Crescent Street under about 4 or 5 different names. I drank there from about 1982 till about 1994. Customer, bartender, dope dealer, but I was in that place Tuesday to Saturday for a fair amount of time, you know, and long story short, everything was gone. I lost my license, didn't matter. I remember one evening, I'm bringing up the license, I just got a car, and I'm driving again, and I remember there was one time when it was either pay for your license or go score a whole bunch of dope that you could sell and make a whole bunch of money. And my intentions were great. You know, the check was dated for Thursday. I'll take the money for that. I'll do this. And I'll put the money in the bank after. Long story short, got that, sold that, made a whole bunch of money. I never put money into my bank account. And it caught up. It didn't catch up with me right away because I got pulled over by the police regularly. Well, not regularly, no, like every week, whatever, but about 4 or 5 times a year, and put my name to the computer, and there was never a problem. Okay, cool. 4 years later, oh, Mr. Reese, you don't have a license. What? So we're going to give you a ticket. We're going to forget about the fact that your headlight is broken. The brake lights don't work on the right-hand side, and a whole bunch of other things that were wrong. We're just going to give you the ticket for driving without a license and no registration, yada, yada, yada. And we're going to ask you to just put the car on the side and get home on your own. But that was in the South Shore, and I lived in LaSalle. So I put the car aside, walked around the block, went back to the bar where I was, continued to drink, whatever. Half an hour, 45 minutes later, went and got the car and went home. But that's how I used to live my life. It didn't matter. The general rules didn't apply to me. And it got to that point where everything else was gone. Everything was gone. My ability to make money was gone, what I used to do in the clubs, because I became so hooked on alcohol and other substances, I couldn't make any money for those people anymore. And I was unable to do what I normally did, so my life just got worse and worse and worse, and I was just taken out of that environment. Long story short, everything was gone. Everything. And I wasn't unable to work in clubs, do my favorite pastime, which was sell narcotics, and I couldn't do any of that anymore, so I had to get a real job like everybody else, which was really difficult for me because I drank Tuesday to Saturday, and now I'm working at places that don't have any booze. They actually have hard work to do, you know, and I was able to do it and maintain it for a little bit, and then I'd get really, really angry, and then once I got angry, I got really, really drunk, I got really, really high, and then barely making it to work, and throwing up at work, and it's like, it's just a never-ending cycle. I lost that job, and put it this way, the job didn't become important anymore, because poor me, it wasn't working out, I didn't have to work, and I remember I ended up quitting that job. I was working at this transport company, because I needed to make money really fast so I could fix everything I needed to fix, and arrange to do something a little illegal with somebody. It didn't pan out. I felt a whole bunch of guilt and remorse, and I couldn't go back to that because I couldn't face the people that had put their trust in me anymore. So I quit that job, you know. And then I found a whole bunch of other jobs. Long story short, whatever I was doing that was good got ruined by alcohol. I threw up regularly whenever I used to drink, like I said before. I remember I was working in this one club, and I had some guys that used to come into the bar every once in a while, and we'd get three shots put on the bar, and suck them back and go on a farm, and I put out three Jack Daniels for myself and everybody else. Did the first one around 1 o'clock in the morning, and I've had a fair amount at that time, and sucked back the first one. It didn't go down that well, and all the people are screaming for their drinks, whatever. Go for the second one. The second one goes down. Now it ain't staying down. It ain't staying down. There's about 35 people around my bar clamoring for drinks. Didn't care. I just pulled up my garbage can, and I just puked everything that was in me. And everybody just stopped asking me for drinks for a couple of minutes. And you'd think, most people, when you throw up and do things like that, you would stop. Me, got a little glass, put some Sprite or whatever that was on the soda fountain, washed out my mouth, and I went and did the other shot. Because that's what I had to do, because these guys expected it. But I'm feeling like shit inside, because I've just thrown up, you know? But that's what it was like for me, you know? And I needed to stop that, and I didn't know how. I tried a whole bunch of different ways, and none of it worked. And I'll bring you up to right near the end. The end, for me, was about a 3-year scraping of the barrel. Pretty much every couple of weeks, if the person that I was living with didn't grab some money off of me, I was going out to drink and use. And just go out, and it just got really bad. And I remember I was working at this one job, and I was screwing up regularly because I couldn't see. I couldn't see anymore. I'm getting a little older. I was about 36 at the time, 37 actually. And my glasses were 6 years old, and my eyesight was getting worse. So I needed to get a new pair of glasses. And I had just been messing up so poorly, so badly, that I knew I needed to do something else. So I scoped out a new pair of glasses, and I went to my neighbor. These glasses are going to cost $275. Could I put it on your credit card? I'll give you $75 a week to pay it off until it's all paid off. And I guess because there was some money in my hand at that time, she said yes. Because she only said yes half the time as opposed to all the time. And I remember going, putting the money, getting the credit card, getting the glasses. And I remember I'd still use a lot the Thursday. It was so bad that I remember the phone ringing in the motel, waking me up because it was time to go home. And the booze was gone, the money was gone, and everybody else was gone. But I was still in the bed. And that Thursday, I did my normal thing. I got my narcotics. But this time I happened to buy it from my 17-year-old cousin, which is a little different for me. I had reached a new low even for me. And went to the bar. Went to the Dick Under. I bought a 1.18 liter of whatever was on sale that day. Put it in the freezer, froze it. Because when you're used to working clubs and you're drinking from 3 to 4, 3 to 6, now I wasn't doing it anymore, but when I went out, I still liked to drink from 3 to 6. So I brought my own and made sure it was nice and cold. Like, freezer for a couple of hours, and it was pretty cool. So now I'm going back to the bar. Go to the bar. I leave my house at 1 o'clock. I get to the bar, and it's 10 past. It's about, takes 5 minutes to get there. I order my blue dry, and I'm going to the poker machine so I could make a whole bunch more money so I can continue this party. And something didn't seem right, because I remembered the week before, and it really sucked. It really, really sucked being woken up in that motel room feeling the way I did. Because 4 weeks prior to that, I decided I was not going to use cocaine anymore, because cocaine was ruining my life. It was destroying me. So I decided I wasn't going to do that. But for the next 4 weeks, instead of just putting that in my system along with everything else, I just put a whole bunch of other things in my system. A whole bunch more booze, same amount of booze, maybe even more. I smoked more grass than I ever smoked before in my life in that month that I had in the last 5 years. And it stuck. So I remember going home with my grass in my little jean pocket here, the little change pocket there, you know, and my 1.18 liter of booze, and I went home. And that was the last time I had a drink. Because something had changed. And I'm not saying that I went home that evening because I was never going to drink again, because I went home with 1.8 liter of booze and some narcotics. But I don't remember when that booze left that room. It was taken out of the room. I know it was my mother who took it out, because they weren't that. There's myself and my mother living at the place, so, and I didn't do it, so somebody else had to do it. And I remember I gave the narcotics back to my cousin. And at the same time, there was a friend of mine, the last person that I would talk with regularly, besides just going out to score and stuff like that and drink and party, and we were much alike. And he had just made it into the rooms of recovery. And he was telling me about what was going on here. And I'd been in here before for 7 days, and because I'd gotten in a lot of trouble with somebody I was working with and got beat up a little, and so got slapped a couple times. I didn't get beat up that time, I got beat up after. But I needed to make a change. So I went to a couple of meetings, got a whole bunch of pamphlets, and just littered them all over my room, because that's what you do. You're trying to prove to everybody else that you're okay. I needed my family to see I was okay. I needed the people that I was working for to see that I was okay. And all these pamphlets are all over the place. And I went to a couple of meetings, and it was great. Everybody, hey, how you doing? You're new? Yeah, na 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 na. And it was great. Three or four days later, the body's feeling a little better. These people are calling me, you know. I talked to them the first couple of days, went to meetings. 4 days later, whoa. I want to talk again, you know. I'm like, literally calling my mom. Take a message. I'll call them back. 7 days later, I'm back out there with my kids. What they were trying to do, they were trying to get me to do what I wanted to do. They were trying to get me to stop. But I didn't really want to do that anymore. I wanted to continue what I used to do. So I distanced myself from those people, and I went back to what I used to know. And from that point on, for 3 years, it was just hell. And I made it into these rooms. I walked into a meeting just like this. Just like Karen was doing, there was a person who was chairing the meeting. And this guy was from my past. And when I remembered him, he wasn't a wonderful guy. He wasn't clean. He was actually dirty all the time. And he was a real pain in the ass. You know, I got money for the team, but can I have three? You know, can I get a couple of drinks after hours? You know, and it was like, get away from me, get away from me. But he looked happy. I found out his girlfriend was there. And I've seen his other girlfriends before, and I didn't want to have anything to do with them either, because one of them used to beat people. I remember the first time I met her, she was beating somebody up in the bar. And now his girlfriend, she's all happy and stuff. It's kind of cool, you know. And he had what I wanted. I wasn't exactly sure what I wanted, but he was happy in a relationship. He was clean and sober. And pretty much, that's what I wanted. I wanted to be clean and sober. I wanted to get into a relationship. This guy met somebody who had a kid. Sort of did the same thing, but she has two as opposed to one. Anyway, long story short. And I wanted what he had. And he said a couple of very simple things. A couple of very, very simple things. He said to everybody, go to meetings. Don't drink and use. Get some phone numbers and use them. And your life will be a little better. You know, just pretty much. It's just basic things that we need to do to stay sober, you know. And get to the next day. And he said, get a sponsor. Join a home group. And your life will get better. You'll learn in here how to be an honest person. Those lies won't work anymore for you. Because I used to be able to manipulate myself into going back out. And I had trouble doing that, you know. I just did exactly like he suggested, you know. He said, join a home group and do service. I didn't hear join one home group, do service. I heard join a group, do service. And, you know, I had this huge ego. I wanted to be up front all the time, you know. So I went to a meeting. I joined that group. At one point in time, I had 10 home groups. You know, I'm working 55, 60 hours a week, and I'm getting to meetings, and I'm setting up chairs, and I'm secretarying sometimes. I'm making copies. It's not the most sanest way to do it, you know. But I would get to most of the meetings on time, and I'd held up my end for my responsibility for most of those times, you know, because I needed to do it, because I didn't feel good about myself, I wasn't able to make it. And then I was able to cut it down to four or five groups, and now I've cut it down to one, which is quite good and amazing. My life is a lot fuller than it was, because when I came in, the only thing I had to do was go to meetings, go to work, and go to meetings. There's nothing else for me. But because I've come into recovery, I have so much more today than I would have ever imagined I would have had. I wanted to learn how to like myself so I could like you. I wanted to learn how to love myself, and I learned how to love you. It's been proven, because I live with somebody that has two kids. Somebody could actually like me and love me, and I could actually do the same. So like everything that always goes around in the world, in my house, outside, but that's okay, because it's not my world. I'm not judge, jury, and executioner anymore, because I failed at that job. Even though sometimes I think I can still handle the job, but that's my burden to cross, or whatever the expression is. And long story short, some of the speaker, the chairperson at that first meeting, said something about working the steps to recovery. And I had no idea what that was about. And if you're new, you're not supposed to know. It's foreign territory to you. We don't know how to stay sober when we first come in, you know? And, you know, he said, get a sponsor. So a couple of weeks later, I go, you're my sponsor. And he goes, no, I'm not. You got to ask me to be your sponsor. You got to ask somebody. You know, there's a little procedure how to do it. And so I asked him, and he said yes. And he told me to call him every single day. And I did. He goes, you know, he laid out a plan for us to do one step per month. And in a year, I'd get my steps done. And it went a little slower than that, because he was busy, I was busy, but we talked regularly every single day, and we worked on some steps, and it was incredible, you know, because as step one says, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. I knew I was a drunk and a junkie for the longest time. It was not a big deal for me, but I could never admit that my life was unmanageable. It wasn't. It was okay, because I was able to drink and use regularly. It was great. It was fabulous, but it turned out not to be so fabulous. It took me about 4 or 5 years to realize that, but that's okay. I got to that point in due time, in God's time, not in my time. And it says here, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. I used to be nuts, and sometimes I'm still nuts today, but I have a belief today that everything will be okay. I heard a speaker, his name was Duke, and he said something that night. Drinking is no longer an option for me. It's no longer an option. Because when I drink, ta-da-da-da-da happens. And it happens all the time for me. I drank, I did drugs, I ended up in a poker machine, I ended up in motel rooms, I ended up paying my bills. It was crazy. So I came to believe that something could stop me, because I was unable to stop myself. So I came to believe that something could stop me from doing what I used to do. And I said, I got to make a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. I remember doing my step three with this sponsor, and you know, it was really good. And he introduced me to this poem, and I can't remember the name of the poem right now. My mind is blank. Talks about never being alone. Long story short, when things are, it says this guy's talking to his higher power. He goes, higher power, you said you'd always be with me no matter what would happen. And footprints in the sand. Woohoo! You know, whenever bad things would happen, he'd always be there for me. And he's looking back over his life. And when things are bad, he only says one set of footprints. And the higher power says to him, when things are really, really bad, I carried you. And that's the grace that we're given by God to make it into these units of recovery. Because there's many times I should have been arrested. I drove drunk many times. Should have been in many accidents, but I never was. You know? I did illegal things, and I never got caught. And that wasn't because of me. That was because somebody had a different plan for me. And it was great. Then they told me I've got to do this fearless, searching and fearless moral inventory of myself. It's just fact-finding, just like if you're in a store. Go down the aisle, inventory everything that's there, the good and the bad. You just want to get rid of all the bad stuff, but you got to find out what it is. So I was able to do, I joined a workshop, and then we were going through the steps, and it was great. I remember, I didn't want to do the workshop. And this furry, mutant, red-headed guy tricked me. He goes, you're going to want to continue doing this workshop because you like to talk and tell people what to do, and you want to make sure you know, have an idea what you're talking about. Yeah, okay. That's a good reason to continue this workshop. anyway. Sometimes you don't. He was honest because it's true. I don't always. Sometimes I like to give my opinion, and sometimes it's really good to know what I'm talking about. And then I had to admit to God, to ourselves, and to another human being, the exact nature of our wrongs. When I did my inventory, I found out what they were, and I discussed it with somebody else. And things I didn't think were wrong, another person looked at it and goes, "Are you crazy? Are you for real? That's not that good." And anyway, long story short, we're able to put it all out there. I was willing to have those defects of character removed. And he said, "You know, it's simple, you know. Just humbly on your knees, recite this poem on a regular basis. My Creator." Okay, I wish I could remember right now, but I can't, but I know I'll find it. "My Creator, I'm now willing to have for you to have all of me, the good and the bad. Please remove from me every single defect of character which stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows." I used to think, oh, I can keep some of these defects of character and get rid of the ones I want. Not about me. It's about what he needs me to do. You know, I'm speaking for him, or he's speaking through me for him. You know, because do it my way. It's like, dude, it doesn't always work. You know, so now it's just more what I need to do. I'm able to go through the fog a little better now, because my mind's a little clearer, because it's not polluted with all that extra crap that's in there. There's still some crap in there shaking around, but there's not as much of it, and I can get to where I need to go a little faster sometimes. And anyway, and then I had to make a list of all persons I had harmed. You know, and because I had to apologize to some of these people. And that's a scary one for a lot of people, because you're supposed to make your list, and you got to go say sorry to everybody. It's pretty much true, but step 8 just says just make a list, and that's what was explained to me, and it made it a lot easier. I was able to put down all the people that I really, some I screwed over, some I had to apologize to, and I didn't have to do anything. For a time, sometimes lazy person like me, even though I'm not as lazy as I'd like to think I am, but sometimes I am. Anyway, I just had to make that list, and when the time was right, I could say, "I'm sorry, I was wrong." And I was actually able to say I was wrong. I can say it sometimes now, because I was never wrong before. I was always right. I was always able to justify what I did, because I needed it. Because poor me, life sucks. It's so bad. I'm all alone. I've got no girlfriend. I've got no this. I've got no car. I've got no house. Blah, 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 blah. Anyway, I did a little work, and I was able to get a whole bunch of these things. And I remember there was this one guy that I owed amends to. And walking on the bus, I'm on my way to go share at a meeting on Sunday night, and I'm living in a rooming house. It was on St. Antoine close to St. Antoine and Addington. And I get on the bus with this other guy who lives in the house, and I see the guy in the back of the bus, and now I'm petrified. This guy likes to use knives and stuff like this, and I owe about $400. And I'd avoided going into NDG for the longest time because I didn't want to run into him, you know. And there's some things I like to do in NDG, like go to Cosmos and things like that, but I couldn't do that because sometimes he would go there. So for 5 years, I didn't go there. And that's how sick and twisted my life used to be, you know. I remember even living in where I was, I didn't walk up one street because his friend lived on that street. I was to walk around the back. And I was really, really sick and twisted. And then I get on the bus and I go to this buddy, "Where are you? Don't say my name. And the guys are, "Okay, whatever." And this guy wants to sit all the way in the back of the bus, and the guy is exactly where Karen is, and I'm on the bus right there, and I'm not looking at him and stuff like this, and I'm scared shitless here. "Okay, now, here's your time to make your amends, you're going to make your amends." I'm not sweating, because I don't sweat that much, because I don't like doing that, and my hands are wringing my hands. And the guy gets up, he's about to get off the bus. "Okay, here it's going to come, here it is, I'm going to have to do it now." And he's walking out of the bus, and he stops pretty much in front of me, and he points to the guy right beside me. "You owe me a whole bunch of money. You know how to get a hold of me? Call me." Because I wasn't ready to do it then, you know. I didn't have the courage to do it at that time, you know. But I didn't have to. God took care of me before I could take care of myself. Now that guy's no longer in Montreal, whatever, he's not around, so now that I'm almost ready. Maybe in a couple of weeks, maybe in the next 2 months when I have some more money. but anyway, that was pretty cool that time. Now I just try and live my life in 10, 11, and 12. You know, I continue to take my own inventory, because when I came in here, I took yours. Because, you know, I still will have some thoughts about taking inventory, but I don't share it as much as I once did, because believe it or not, it gets you in trouble. And I'm able to admit to myself a lot when I'm wrong. Sometimes only to myself, not to the other people. And I know, because it's a little more difficult for me to live in my own shit when I've done a whole bunch of things wrong. and which is really good because I don't stay that way for long. Because I was angry for about 20 years. You know, sometimes I'm angry for 20 minutes, 2 hours. In the last 6 months, I was angry for 2 days, but that wasn't very good. And anyway, I sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understand Him, praying only for His knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. Now that the fog has lifted a little bit, you know, when I'm taking my own inventory during the day, I continually do that. At the end of the night, I sort of ask for His guidance and to get the answers when He's ready to give them to me. Life's a little better. You know, sometimes before I go to bed, you know, I have a quick thought. I really need the answer to this problem. I need it tomorrow morning by 7:30 when I'm going to work, you know. Doesn't always happen that way, you know. Okay, could I have it on the bus when I'm reading the meditation? No. But you know, sometimes I'm reading that meditation in the morning because I was taught that I got to read some literature every once in a while and stay focused, you know, stay in contact. It's a good way for me, you know. And I read a daily reflection every single morning, but Monday to Friday on the bus. I normally read it about 4 times a week, and sometimes I read it when I get to work because I forgot to read it on the bus because I didn't get a seat. I don't want to pull it out. It's too crowded. All these excuses for me not to do it that I could come up with. And my answers come to me, you know. Sometimes when I'm thinking about, oh, I wanted this answer, my question from a couple of weeks gets answered, and I'm able to find out how I could possibly do these things. And I could accept my own consequences today. You know, over the weekend, I went to a meeting, and the topic was acceptance. I've been able to accept a lot more today, and that's really, really good. And I'm a lot happier. I'm not always, woohoo, rah, rah, like the band's going, but I feel much better today. And I've had that spiritual awakening as a result of working these steps, and it's amazing. Life is great. I live my life in hope today. Hope of mind and bodies is incredible today. Because I never had that before. Never, ever, ever. That first drink is not an option for me. You know, I've been in a debonair, and that Colt 45 looks really, really good. It's even sweating there, you know. And I remember that bitter taste, and that, you know, I wasn't one of those people that booze tastes really, really good going down. I hated it, you know. I hated beer, but take a couple of them, and the taste was gone. You know, a couple of Jack Daniels. I hated the taste of Jack Daniels. Had to drink it cold because it was smoother. No, it wasn't, you know, but have a couple of them went down a lot better, you know. And sometimes it looks really, really good. And I was told to play the tape. What happens if you take that drink? What is the craziness that could happen? Because you're probably going to be wrong. It'll probably be a lot worse. Because we can't tell the future, you know. We have an idea what will happen. Because I know if I take that drink, see ya. I'm going to tell all of you, I got no purpose for you. I don't want to help you. I don't want help from you. I want nothing to do with you. Because the booze will be the most important thing for me. So I've been able to manage since April 12, 2001, not to take that first drink. And there's a set of concepts or principles, whatever you want to call them, and I try and put those in my life today. And my life is a lot better. I think, like I said, the fog has cleared a lot more. I've practiced a lot of these principles so much, my initial thoughts are much better today. They're clear. And when they're not, the shit hits the fan. Then I got to deal with that because I'm able to today. Sometimes it's by, which doesn't really work that well, but it feels good at the time. You know, it's that thought, you know, what should I do? Should I slam the door? Should I bang my hand on the counter? Should I? Damn, I'll do it anyway. You know, I did it about 5 months ago and I had a nice little reminder that the knuckles were swollen and I couldn't close the hand properly. And 3 or 4 days, anger doesn't work that well. But you know, I used to punch walls when I was younger, you know. But this time I didn't punch a wall. Punch a countertop. What's it made of? Okay. It's not a big chair. And it's like that counter didn't move, you know. Counter stood its ground, you know, right down. But it's okay. Hopefully won't do that. Because I didn't like the fact that I couldn't close my hand and it hurt. And I didn't want any help, you know, that I got offered some ice work. No, I'm okay. A little bit later, but you know, that was ego. Because it helped a lot, the ice. But didn't want it at the time because don't want any help. I'm happy in my own misery. Leave me the hell alone. But it was pretty cool anyway. Long story short, I think I've talked enough. And if you're new, things will get better. Then they'll get worse. And then they'll get better. And they'll probably get worse again. But if you don't drink, you'll be able to get to the good times a lot better. So in closing, I have a couple of things I'd like to close with. Three simple things. Trust God, clean house, work with others. How to trust God? Steps 1, 2, and 3. You work with your sponsor or other people in the fellowship. Call them regularly. Get their input. Because when I first came in, the only thing I needed to do was I needed to learn how to stop drinking. That was it. I didn't need to learn how to get my credit rating back or how to pay bills. I needed to learn how to stop drinking. That was cool. I got that done. Then I needed to learn how to live. To learn how to live, I had to clean house. I had to find out what the hell was wrong, what the hell I had done wrong, and what was wrong with me. I found out I was selfish, self-centered, egotistical, and I like having my own way. I'm not as selfish, I'm not as egotistical, and I still like having my own way. But I know today that it's not always going to be my way. Compromise happens sometimes. It does, it does. And I have to work with others. I have a sponsee, maybe another one, in the beginning stage of working out, if it's possible. And it's much better. I call my sponsor at least 3 or 4 times a week. A little busy. And sometimes it's just as simple as, hey, everything's pretty cool today. Had a good day. Speak with you tomorrow or give me a call back. You know? And sometimes it's, oh, not that bad. You know, I didn't do that. It didn't work out, you know. But it's all right. You know, and if your ass is on fire, don't have a drink. If your arm is on fire, don't have a drink. If your legs are on fire, don't have a drink. Put out the fire and don't use alcohol. Thank you.
Thank you.